This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We use power well beyond our own body's ability to produce. And the way we use power is, it's as if each of us had 200 slaves working for us. And so I think it is time for people to realize that and to connect their usage with their output.
Since man's romance with fossil fuels and electricity began, bicycles have mostly been viewed as an obsolete technology. But pedaling remains one of the most efficient mechanisms to harvest human energy. While it falls short of a panacea, increasing our use of pedaling beyond traditional transportation is on the rise, and it shows what's possible. The simple, healthy act of pedaling is replacing fossil fuels for a growing list of innovative projects. Around the world, bicycle-based systems are powering boats and snowplows, school buses, water-lifting machines in farming villages that have no electricity, gyms and rec centers, and even music concerts. And with gas power generators in New York's Zuccotti Park being banned, the protesters at Occupy Wall Street have turned to pedal power for alternative electricity generation as well. From obesity to climate change, solving some of our most seemingly intractable problems start with the simplest of steps, or in this case, pedals. This week on Sea Change Radio, we talk pedal power with two evangelists for the technology. First, I speak with Adam Bozell, whose Green Micro Gym in Portland, Oregon is raising awareness alongside Pulses. Then I sit down with Paul Friedman, the founder of Rock the Bike, a San Francisco organization that puts on pedal-powered concerts and other events.
There are people who have let the problems of today lead them to conclude that for them life is not the way. But every problem has an answer, and if yours you cannot find, you should talk it over to him. He'll give you peace of mind when you feel your life's too hard.
My guest today on Sea Change Radio is the founder of the Green Micro Gym, Adam Bozell. Adam, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
Tell us what the Green Micro Gym is all about.
Well, the Green Micro Gym is basically the only gym in the world that really takes seriously, being legitimately green, where we, have equipment that actually generates electricity and goes back into the grid. And then we also have an energy-saving culture that uses far, far, far less electricity than traditional gyms. We're neighborhood facilities. We've got a few here in Portland, about 3,000 square feet, neighborhood home gym away from home kind of feel.
And tell us what sets the Green Micro Gym apart from a Gold's Gym or a Planet Fitness, one of the larger chains. How are you greener?
Well, we have electricity generating cardio equipment. And then we also just have what we call an energy saving culture, which is just basically, your common sense type stuff. If you're using it, great. If you're not using it, turn it off kind of thing. So we give a lot of control to the members to, how they use the equipment, how they use the lights and the fans and the radio, even the TVs. And then we just do everything we possibly can to save energy in every possible way.
What percentage of your electric uses are being pedal powered?
Well, that's hard to say because we don't, the technology is so new that we don't have a really super accurate way of tracking all of that yet. I would say it's probably less than 10% of the gym. And that's just physics, humans can only, they only put out so much energy, and so then we have to capture it. But, because we've been using this electricity generating equipment, what we've found is just, we've learned the importance of, or how wasteful, most gyms are, for example, and we've just taken a lot of really common sense measures to reduce our energy usage. So, again, even though we don't generate a high percentage of what the gym uses, our gym uses about 85% less electricity per square foot than normally run gyms, whether they're very small gyms or very large gyms.
Yeah, how did you come up with that calculation?
We had some students do a project where they just basically called up a bunch of other gyms and found out how much electricity they used every month, and we just sort of did the math from there.
So describe for us some of the electric generating devices that you have in the Green Micro Gym, Adam.
Okay, we have sort of three different types of devices right now. We've got the spin bike, which is, just a bicycle made for, especially made for indoor cycling, called a spin bike normally. And that makes electricity. And then we also have elliptical machines. And then we have like the recumbent bike, which would be the one that you sit down on that you see commonly in gyms.
So are these standard machines that you've customized for your members to produce electricity with, or are these things that you bought on the market?
Well, in the beginning, we customized machines, and that's still kind of what retrofitting is, what we call it. But the machines that I have now, I've purchased from Plugout, which is the company that I co-founded with Ryan Barr and Aaron Bird. And those are machines that anyone can buy.
And if somebody wanted to get one of these machines for their home, how would they be able to convert their exercise into electricity?
Well, that's the great thing about Plugout, is that all you have to do is plug it into your wall and it sends electricity back into the building. You can buy it, have it sent to you, and plug it in, and you're going.
So when you say it sends electricity back into the building, does that show up on your electric bill, or how does one maximize that production of electricity?
Well, the best way to look at it is, the analogy of if you grew your own vegetables, if you grow your own vegetables, you're going to spend less at the grocery store on vegetables. Same kind of thing. If you make your own electricity when you're exercising, you're going to spend less on electricity. It's not going to show up on your power bill in terms of, something saying, look how much electricity you made this month. But you will be reducing the amount of electricity your building needs. It's essentially exactly like plugging in a toaster, except for instead of using electricity, you're making electricity that's getting used by maybe your toaster.
But I didn't know that like an older home can actually be a two-way interactive grid. Is that what you're saying, basically, is that the home can be its own little grid if used effectively?
Yeah. As long as you've got a three-prong wall outlet, you can make the electricity go either way. That's something that I didn't know before I, started doing all this either, but it's as simple as that.
What kind of a dent in your gym's electric bill do these machines end up making? What are we talking about in terms of scale?
Basically, if you're pedaling, you're creating 100 watts and you do it for an hour every day, that's going to be 3,000 watts for the month, right? Mm-hmm. 3,000 watt hours. So 3 kilowatt hours. A kilowatt hour costs about 15 cents. So you're looking at about 45 cents. Again, we're not powering the world with these exercise machines. We're just saying instead of a machine that uses electricity, we've got machines that make electricity and send it back. So,
are there more efficient ways to do it? This is just a more cost-effective way to do it.
No, this is just the way it works. Humans. The reason why that this hasn't happened, that people aren't making millions of dollars off of this, is because humans only make a certain amount of, we only generate a certain amount of energy. That's why you have dams. Because they're able to, dams and huge wind farms and, massive solar arrays and oil and coal and all of that, because the amount of electricity, the amount of energy that we consume in our day-to-day life is very, very, very high.
What are you trying to demonstrate to your members when they're using a pedal power exercise machine, Adam?
Well, I think what we do is, you know, we're just saying, you know, this is one tiny little splice of the puzzle. This is a way that you can, you know, have something more, again, you know, you're making electricity rather than wasting electricity. A lot of people feel guilty when they go to the gym. They're like, gosh, look at all this wasted electricity, wasted energy. So this is answering that question. Again, you know, by knowing, wow, you know, when I'm pedaling pretty hard, that lights, you know, that basically powers my energy efficient TV or my, you know, maybe a little bit more than powers my laptop. Maybe that helps people to remind themselves to, you know, turn it off when they walk out of the room. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, you know, I'm sure that you know this and I'm sure all your listeners know this. The way that we're going to really solve this energy crisis that we're in or about to be in is by becoming way, way, way more energy efficient in every way. And if this is something that helps people realize that a little bit more, because it's not that hard to become more energy efficient. And one of the easiest, most common sense ways is to just have everything turned off when it's not being used. And we've shown that, you know, we save 85% compared to a traditional gym just by not having things turned on when no one's using them.
Adam Bozell, the founder of the Green Micro Gym and Plug Out Fitness, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alex.
She is my Lowrider. She is my Lowrider. Some say she's bad, but she's better than Lowrider.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
My guest today on Sea Change Radio is the founder of Rock the Bike, Paul Friedman. Rock the Bike is a bike company that pedal powers events and focuses on making pedal power gear. Paul, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me, Alex.
So what was the inspiration behind Rock the Bike, Paul?
The first project that got me going was building a soul cycle for my bike. And that's basically a battery-powered music system. In my case, it had transparent blue acrylic speaker boxes that glowed in the dark, and it had controls on the handlebars that allowed me to change the songs and turn the lights on and off or boost the bass. And with that soul cycle, I started leading group rides, often to music events like Power to the Peaceful in Golden Gate Park. I would lead a ride there, and we'd show up with 10 people or 20 people in good spirits, having ridden through the city together. So that was kind of the thing that got me interested in combining bikes and music.
And how does the technology work in terms of powering something with a bicycle?
Normally when you ride your bike around town, you got both wheels on the ground, and the front wheel is connected to the handlebars, and that's how you steer. And the rear wheel is connected to the drivetrain, to the gears. And when you pedal, it tugs the chain, pulls the cogs, and you go, because the tire is on the asphalt and your force is transmitted into the tire. So with our pedal power bikes, we elevate the rear wheel, and that means that when you pedal, there's no resistance at all. And then we use very efficient generators to grab the power while that wheel is spinning in the air. And the generators have electromagnetic coils that move past magnets and create an electric field, which is just like a high pressure area of electrons. And then just like high pressure systems in weather, the electrons want to flow from high to low. So if you've got a high energy, a high potential area of electrons by the wheel where you're using the generator, then it will want to flow towards your storage tank, which in our case is a capacitor. And then we feed all of our electronics from the capacitor.
So how much power can one generate from a single bicycle and a really good pedaler?
Well, most people, like most average people that ride regularly, would be able to sustain 75 to 100 watts output for, you know, a few songs at a concert. And then if you took a competitive cyclist, they would be able to sustain 500 or 600 watts for the same amount of time.
For like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
How much have you created in terms of power with your events and pedal powering?
The biggest event that we have pedal powered or been part of, the max wattage at that event was around 1,200 to 1,500 watts, which is really an amazing number because that's how much a microwave oven uses. So what you realize when you do this work is that for the same amount of power that goes into warming up a frozen dinner, you can provide music for 500 or 1,000 people to have a positive experience and enjoy each other's company. So if you extend that to a whole festival, you could easily have a situation where people bike from around town or maybe from even the whole region. They come together, let's just say Golden Gate Park. They come together at Golden Gate Park. They pedal power music. They experience an awesome day of music with local bands that hopefully also biked there, or we help them by showing up at their apartment and transporting their music gear. Everyone comes together, we have day-long music, and then they ride home, and the amount of power that we were using from the grid was zero. The amount of power that we were using from the petroleum economy was zero. The amount of power that we were producing in order to have our music experience was on the order of 1,000 watts or less. And if all those people were just living their lives in our lifestyle, they might have been using 1,000 times as much power or more. So it's this weird thing where people come together, have a great experience, an experience of togetherness, and we're using much less power than if we had just been off doing our own thing.
So what is beyond the raising awareness of the technology of pedal power, what are some of your longer range goals for Rock the Bike, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, if I look back on the work and see that a lot of people have come to our events and gotten inspired to ride bikes more regularly, that would be one of the really key outcomes. I think that it's awesome that people start asking questions about energy use, but one of the most important things that an individual could do is to look at their personal transportation habits. And I know with biking, you get this awesome combination of empowering yourself through exercise and getting your heart beating, getting your thoughts thinking, and way reducing your involvement in the fossil fuel economy. I think that if a human on a bicycle were measured in terms of miles per gallon, they'd be getting 1,000 miles per gallon. So you're really making an impact when you ride someplace. Plus the symbol is very important. The act of pedaling can be seen from a great distance. You can see someone crossing a side street two blocks down for you, and if their feet are moving on the pedals, you can register that that is pedaling, even from a couple hundred meters away, and that's sending out a vibration in the community that is saying that there's these people out there that are powering their own transportation. So when you're pedaling, you're putting that out, and it spreads. So that's a really important change that we can make.
Little red wagon, little red bike. I ain't no monkey, but I know what I like. I like the way you love me strong and slow. I'm taking you with me, honey, baby, when I go.
We here at Sea Change Radio are trying to get a better idea of who's listening to the show, so we're conducting a survey. Just follow the link at seachangeradio.com and answer a few basic questions that'll only take a few minutes. Not only will you be supporting the show, you also may win something. Please go to seachangeradio.com and click on the survey link. This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the founder of Rock the Bike, Paul Friedman. Paul, your company, Rock the Bike, also focuses on making pedal power gear for other pedal powering wannabes or entrepreneurs. How long would it take for them, and how much money are we talking about to be able to pedal their own power on an intermittent basis?
Well, our most accessible piece of pedal power gear is the Fender Blender, which is a bike blender. It makes smoothies. And the basic one fits on any bike, and it's called the Fender Blender Universal, and we call it the FBU. And you can put it on your bike, and then on the days that you want to make a smoothie, you use these quick release thumb screws and put your smoothie attachment on it, and you can make smoothies in a school or a summer camp or at an event or at a street fair. And we charge $250 for the FBU. And it's a great demonstration of human power. The sound of the ice crushing really draws a crowd. And then if your smoothie flavor is good, you can really delight people. You can give away 5 or 10 samples in one pitcher.
We spoke to the founder of a Green Gym in Portland, Oregon, earlier in the show that uses pedal power for some of their equipment. What sort of potential do you see for that idea catching on?
In terms of what motivates me about the crossover between like the work of Rock the Bike and the world of fitness, since I personally am not a gym goer, I would really like to be involved with the spin class of the future. I believe that spin classes are amazing sources of power because people really sweat. And the gym and the instructor of the spin class, the goal is to get people to have a workout that's beyond that of what they would have motivated themselves to do, by putting you in a sort of an intense group setting and turning the music up and the oons oons. Well, what I'd like to do with the spin class is I'd like to keep the workout aspect, maybe turn down the competitive energy a little bit and not make it less about competing with the person next to you and seeing who's sweating harder, and maybe trying to funnel that whole room into some shared purpose for even an hour. And the shared purpose might be, okay, right now what we're doing is we're charging a battery bank so that this community event that's happening this coming Saturday can have power for their all-day exhibits. And then all those people are involved and will show up at the community event on Saturday knowing that they had helped to power it. And then someone picks it up. Someone goes to the gym, picks up the batteries on a cargo bike and brings them over to the event. And that power was provided by the people from the gym.
Or just the gym actually saving some money on their power bills, so it could be a not completely altruistic idea. It could pay for itself. If you're running 8 spin classes a day in a pretty busy gym and you retrofit 10 of these bikes, maybe it won't pay for itself within 6 to 12 months, but
I've heard 80 years.
80 years?
Yeah, that was the conclusion of the LA Times. But I mean, the 80-year number is pretty, might be an extreme. But I do know that if you convert your pedal power to money at the cost of PG&E's electricity, I think it's like 1 or 2 cents an hour. It's something really embarrassingly low. And I think that is something that people need to realize, that we use power well beyond our own body's ability to produce. And the way we use power is it's as if each of us had 200 slaves working for us. And so I think it is time for people to realize that and to connect their usage with their output. And even if they continue to use power at 50 or 100 or 200 times what their body could output, at least they would know what that would feel like.
It certainly is something that we take for granted. I appreciate you walking us through, or pedaling us through, what you do. Paul Friedman, the founder of Rock the Bike, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
You're welcome.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. Before we close, I'd like to take a few minutes and read to you an excerpt from a recent piece posted on the Center for American Progress website. That's americanprogress.org. It's a piece by Kate Gordon. It's titled, Power for the People, Energy for the 99%. The Occupy Wall Street protests are focusing Americans' attention on the fact that power is increasingly consolidated into the hands of very few individuals and corporations. This is especially true in the energy sector. 2 weeks ago, the country's five largest oil companies, BP, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, and Royal Dutch Shell, released their third quarter profits and once again revealed that high gas prices are bad for consumers but great for big oil, which pulled in a staggering $101 billion in profits during the first 9 months of 2011. Today, Washington politicians publicly bicker over renewable energy credit programs that will only cost taxpayers $2.5 billion, while the oil and gas industry quietly pulls in $7 billion in annual subsidies. But even that is not enough for big oil. These companies are now lobbying hard for even more federal government support, for even more of the public's waters and lands to be opened up for drilling rigs or pipelines, and for even fewer health and safety standards to govern those projects. At the same time, those of us who pay the taxes that subsidize big oil call us the 99%, though in reality we're more like the 99.99%, must continue paying out precious dollars at the pump and must suffer from the ill health effects of fossil fuel pollution because we have very little choice in how we power or fuel our lives. But it doesn't have to be this way. We have the power to choose a brighter, more equitable, more sustainable future. What could that future look like? Picture an America where you don't have to drive at all because buses, trains, and light rail systems are convenient and accessible. Bike lanes are no longer a luxury of certain coastal cities, but are the norm along heavily trafficked commuter corridors. And cities are designed to allow workers to live much closer to their jobs, avoiding long commutes altogether. Picture an America where at least half of our electricity comes from renewable sources such as wind, solar, wave, and geothermal. In this America, the air and water are clean. The oceans and lakes are healthy enough to support a range of uses, from a vibrant commercial fishing industry, to family trips to the beach in summer, to offshore wind production that powers our economic growth. Our most precious public lands are protected from mining and drilling, but remain open for recreation and tourism. That's one vision for our energy economy. Here's another one, brought to us by the American Petroleum Institute. It's a future where all our coastlines are open to deep water drilling, even though we know more drilling won't make us more energy independent or significantly lower our gas prices. In this America, pipelines take dirty energy across pristine landscapes to refining stations so we can export that energy to developing countries that are themselves trying to choose a cleaner future. Coal miners continue to risk illness and death by going deep into the bowels of the earth, and tops are still blown off pristine mountain ranges to extract and export these resources. Huge swaths of federal lands that were once off limits, places such as the Outer Continental Shelf on our East Coast or portions of the Rocky Mountains that are protected today, are instead open for drilling and exploring, without regard to potential health and safety costs. And consumers continue to be slaves to the volatile global prices of fossil fuels, while a small handful of companies reap the global profits. Decisions are being made every day from Wall Street to Washington, D.C. Decisions that will put us on a path to a clean, just, and vibrant future, or instead chain our future options to a path of pollution, poverty, and growing peril. At this moment, our government is facing decisions about whether to build the Keystone XL pipeline to transport heavy, polluting tar sands oil from Canada across the Great Plains to refineries in Texas, whether to allow the Environmental Protection Agency to keep our air and water clean, whether to keep subsidizing oil while exempting natural gas drilling from health and safety regulations, and whether to provide the targeted government support and private sector levers necessary to ensure America continues to lead the world in new and cleaner energy solutions for the global market. In the next few years, we will face even bigger decisions, in particular, the decision about whether and how to place a value on carbon so that we start to bring down emissions and address global warming, and about how to adapt to the global warming impacts that our cities and citizens are already beginning to feel. We have the power to build an energy future that works for everyone, not just for big oil. The choice is ours. This episode of Sea Change Radio is dedicated to the memory of Rosemary Bowie.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Stevie Wonder, JJ Cale, and Bob Dylan. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com.
That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.